Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long and winding Royal Road. My name is W.H. Park, and this is episode 25 of the LNWRR, the show that looks back at 1990s All Japan Pro Wrestling, in my humble estimation, the greatest period of in-ring action ever to exist in the history of professional wrestling. And today we're going to look at a very special match between two of the most important people in the history of All Japan Pro Wrestling, and that would be Mitsuhara Misawa taking on Toshi Akikawada for the first time ever for the Triple Crown. So joining me on today's review is someone who doesn't normally talk about professional wrestling here at Post Wrestling. They usually talk about mixed martial arts, usually the UFC and other promotions, including the, I think, the Pillow Fight League. And that would be Eric Marcotte. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, wonderful, fabulous even. Good to be here, WH.
Yes. So just for the sake of transparency, I think that's the word I'm looking for. This is our second attempt at recording this. Because for some, on my end at least, I was having some difficulty hearing Eric. Don't know if it's because of me or because of him, who knows, but I had to stop the recording and restart it. So this is our second attempt at doing this show, and hopefully we will have no issues. That's why Eric's like kind of laughing there, but
there's a lost 50 minutes out there, and listen, WH and I can both say that is the greatest 50 minutes that have ever been recorded.
There is some stuff on that thing, that lost audio that's in the ether now, that people, when they heard, when if they ever heard it, would be like trying, like getting out the torches and the pitchforks looking for me, probably. You know, some of them are fellow members of the post wrestling community. They know who I'm talking about. But yes, we shan't cry over spilt milk there, Eric.
A few tears might be shed, but not too much, because we still have a tremendous match to talk about here.
That's right. So for the listeners, they who might be familiar with you, usually you're talking about MMA, but you are a fan of pro wrestling as well.
Correct. Yes.
Yes. And what is what kind of history do you have with All Japan Pro Wrestling, particularly from this era?
If we're talking 90s All Japan, really, what I would say is if you went onto a site like Cage Match and you just looked at up the highest rated matches on the site, the ones that appear right at the top from All Japan, those are the ones I've seen. So I'm a pretty novice All Japan viewer, I'd say.
But the match we're going to talk about, which would be Misawa versus Kawada from the date of October 21st, 1992. This would have been your first time watching this particular match.
Yeah, I had never seen this match before this viewing.
Okay, and then we're gonna get your thoughts on this match, obviously, and kind of get your overall impressions at the end of this review. But what you have seen from All Japan, like, what is it that you find enjoyable about it, if you find it enjoyable?
I definitely find it enjoyable. Although, to be fair, like I said, the matches I've seen from it are considered some of the greatest matches in the history of the industry. So I only watch the best of the best. But before we even talk about the in-ring action, the atmosphere for these events is always incredible. And the in-ring action, hard-hitting, dangerous at points, but that's kind of part of the appeal if we're being honest with ourselves, right? And the storytelling is fantastic.
Yeah, I think what's the phrase that some people like to put out there, the safety police. I'm certainly not a member of the safety police per se, but you know what? Like, I understand. Like, I've been in wrestling shows, and I've been in, you know, at matches where like I almost thought, you know, oh my God, did that person like seriously injure themselves to the point of like maybe paralysis or even near death? And that's not a fun experience. And I don't like seeing it on television necessarily. I think there is a way to yes, I'm going to say this. I think there is a way to do this style and be as safe as you can in wrestling. I mean, people have died. Yes, Misawa is the person who has died because of a lot of things, including working this style. But like, here's the thing is like, Kawada, Tawe, Kobashi have not died. They got out, and you know, and there's always going to be wear and tear on people's bodies. Doesn't matter what style of wrestling you do, whether it's American, Japanese, or Lucha Libre, there's people are going to come out of wrestling banged up and not being able to have full use of their body, as it were, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a business that has very high risks, high stakes whenever you get into the ring, and it doesn't even necessarily dictate wrestling a style like this. We've seen people work much safer styles in ring, and there have obviously been very unfortunate things that have happened, so yeah. It's just part of the business.
It is. It's part of the fandom, too, you know? Like, for us to watch it, it's like, I still love watching this style, like going back to watching old footage of it, or even like in you know, 2022, that people still do this kind of like King's Road style in Japan and in America. And hey, you know, if they can do it and they come out of it relatively unscathed, and I'm happy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really interesting point that you bring up here. Like, personally, like my personal favorite match ever would be Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. And that's, of course, the match where Shibata does the headbutt and nearly dies, right? Effectively ends his career up until recently. So it's a thing where you have to balance the guilt with the enjoyment, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I can watch that match knowing
so
that,
can I.
Knowing that ultimately he does not die. And then hopefully he can come back to the ring in some kind of capacity. You know, that would be great. If he's in danger, don't. It's not worth it. You know, that would be what I would say. But Masao versus Kawada, 10-21-92. Let's talk about some background for this match. To get this title shot. So at the time, Masao is the Triple Crown champion. He has just beaten Stan Hansen for it. Then this is his first time with the Triple Crown. And for Kawada to get this title shot, he had to face his former, his future tag team partner in Akira Taue on September 9th, 1992. And he wins this number one contenders match that a lot of fans would think that, okay, Taue is going to win it, because keep in mind at this point in time, Kawada is Misawa's regular tag team partner. They have been the world team tag team champions, and they will be the world tag team champions again in the future, before this match and after this match. So it's not like they had a split or anything like that. No, just Kawada. You know, maybe a lot of people thought Kawada was going to be kind of like the gatekeeper for Taue. Like, Taue would get the match to face Misawa, but Kawada would have softened him up, so to speak, for his leader, for Misawa here. But that's not what happened. In fact, Kawada beats Taue, and then it's like, okay, these guys who are tag team partners, who are best friends, are now going to face each other for these titles. And I think that's if that's deliberate on Giant Baba's part, which I think it would be, then that's a really great way to, like, kind of, you know, give the fans something that they didn't expect, but they probably wanted.
Agreed completely. And there is no question about what they wanted from the reaction to Kawada that we'll get in this match. And the entire match really does play off their relationship and subverts your expectations in some ways.
I want to talk about their tag team with the context of the titles that they would win. They were world tag team champions twice. Once from July 24th to December 6th, 1992, they win the belts from the Miracle Violence Connection of Terry Gordy and Steve Williams. They have one successful defense against Jumbo Tsuruta and Akira Taue on September 4th, 1991, before losing the titles back to Gordy and Williams on December 6th, 1991. Their second reign would happen a couple of months after this match on December 4th, 1992, in the Real World Tag League Tournament Finals. They would defeat the team of Akira Taue and a young Jun Akiyama, and then they would lose the titles to Gordy and Williams on January 30th, 1993. So, like, for not a very long reign, their second run with the belts, less just about over a month there. And yeah, like, have you ever seen any of their tag team matches, like Misawa and Kawada as a tag team?
Misawa and Kawada? No, I haven't seen them together before.
They are a great team. Like they're great. They're better rivals, but they have an awesome team. And I would highly recommend people check out any of the matches they have against the Miracle Violence Connection or against Jumbo Tsuruta and Akira Taue. Just some excellent, excellent matches there with them as a tag team, actually. Kawada has had chances at the Triple Crown before this match, Eric. He's faced Jumbo Tsuruta on October 24th, 1981, and came up short there against Jumbo. He also faced Stan Hansen on June 5th of the 1992 as well, and he failed in that challenge as well. For Misawa, again, this is his first reign with the Triple Crown, and this reign is a very, very long reign. It lasts from 1992, from August 22nd, 1992, where he wins the title from Steve Williams until July 28th, 1994, where he loses it to Steve Williams. And so he's kind of a precursor to Roman Reigns in his current reign as the the WWE Universal Undisputed, whatever the fuck it is, title he holds right now.
That's a great comparison, WH.
That is a great comparison. In our
first time I've heard it today.
No, actually, you made that comparison, and I said, hey, this Misawa in this case holds a wrestling title, and Roman holds a sports entertainment title.
There were a lot of shots taken during this these minutes of lost audio.
Listen, I like Roman, but let's be honest. The Triple Crown in the 90s is greater than the Triple Crown anytime, really, is greater than the WWE world title in the last, I don't know how long, you know.
Ever, maybe?
I would say ever. I'm not going to go that far. Say ever. I'm just going to say for the last, because it's not a wrestling company anymore. That's what I say. It's not a wrestling company. That's just my feeling. In this very long 2-year reign, Misawa has 7 successful defenses, 3 of them against Kawada. Of course, this match. So, spoiler, everyone. Kawada doesn't win the title in this match. Also on July 29th in 1993 and on June 3rd, 1994, which is probably their most famous match and the one people allowed the most over any other match. And I said in our original conversation, Eric, that, maybe I will do these matches in as part of kind of a mini series over the course of maybe the next year or so, just to like with different people, just to like, you know, have a kind of the Kawada Misawa series of the first title reign.
And in response, I said that was a very good idea. And yes, I maintain that opinion.
There you go. And when the match starts, I think it was really interesting to note that the announcers declare this a quote unquote dream match because of the fact that Misawa and Kawada, like I said, have been allies and they've been tag team partners for over 2 years now in Super Generation Army. And the last time they ever had a singles match with one another was 9 years earlier. So in that time, for 9 years, Eric, they've been in the same company. The roster is not that varied, but they have never even faced each other in a singles match in a tournament or for like some like exhibition match or anything like that. It's amazing.
Absolutely remarkable being able to keep guys away from each other for so long, especially given the prevalence of things like tournaments, like you mentioned and whatnot, that you wouldn't be planning this 9 years ahead, obviously. They were 9 years before this match. I didn't sit down and say, let's keep these guys apart for 9 years and build up to this match. Now, a lot of coincidence plays into that, and couple that with smart booking, and it leads to a really big match like we had here.
Well, the other thing we have to keep in mind, like, okay, they haven't touched in a singles match for 9 years. They've been partners for the last 2 years. But also we have to take account like their own like personal history with one another. Like it goes beyond wrestling. So keep in mind, Misawa and Kawada attended the same high school with Misawa being ahead by 1 year and thus being the senior or senpai in their relationship. This is mirrored also in their professional wrestling careers as Misawa starts his training in the All Japan Dojo 1 year earlier and before Kawada, and it's always ahead of Kawada by about 1 year. And this translates to when they make their debuts. Misawa goes on excursion before Kawada. Misawa comes back before Kawada. Baba, you know, promotes him and elevates Misawa before he does with Kawada. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind that Kawada's progression as a professional wrestler is probably, I'd say, the same as Misawa. Like, he's getting as good as Misawa is and wrestling at a level, maybe not on a star level, but at on in-ring level. Like, it's very, very close. Like, maybe Misawa is just a little bit better, like objectively in the ring, but Kawada is pretty fucking awesome in his own right as well.
And that real life relationship and progression kind of plays itself out throughout their rivalry in the 90s as well, you can say.
Yeah. And to put also like another kind of like layer on top of this rivalry that they will eventually, like, you know, that will eventually blossom throughout the, you know, the 1990s after this match, is that, you know, for Misawa, when he's a young wrestler, he's put under the mentorship of, you know, the ace of the company at the time, who is Jumbo Tsuruta. And Kawada is then placed under the mentorship of Jumbo's main rival and the 1B to Jumbo's 1A, and that's Genichiro Tenryu. So like, Kawada and Misawa's mentors are rivals with one another, and this is kind of revisited to Misawa and Kawada. And it's also interesting because the relationship with Tsuruta and Tenryu is very similar. They were tag team partners. They split. They became rivals. They would feud over the Triple Crown many times. So it's a really interesting how this kind of is a kind of a legacy feud almost.
Yep, it plays out very similarly, you can suppose. I don't know what you would call that. It's not a coincidence. I've lost the word for it right now. My apologies.
Well, when it comes back to you, Eric, you can
in the original audio, Lost for All.
I don't even think you said anything about this in the show.
I don't know either. It's just using that as an excuse.
But yeah, this is a very like common formula that a lot of like Japanese promotions like to use to build like kind of generational rivalries with people. So like, you know, you see it in Jumbo versus Tenryu. Then it's visited again with Misawa and Kawada. And then I would say famously in like New Japan, like most recent New Japan, would be like kind of this, a similar thing was done with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura, where they were first like, you know, paired together as a tag team. They were IWGP tag team champions, then they split, and then they became eternal rivals with one another. They're generating so many classic matches between them primarily for the, you know, IWGP world title or for maybe like a spot to advance in the G1 climax or something like that. But it's not an uncommon thing to see this kind of like formula play out in any type of Japanese wrestling promotion.
I mean, it's a very like easy to tell story, especially when it's playing off a real life relationship as it does in the match that we're about to talk about.
Yes, that's correct. So let's talk about the match. Let's quickly go through some details of where this match took place. It emanated from the Nippon Budokan, one of my favorite buildings to have ever watched wrestling in, from October 21st, 1992. This is the last show of All Japan's 20th anniversary Giant Series tour. And the attendance is listed as 16,300 people. And Eric, you know, in our original audio, we both commented that we can believe that this attendance figure is probably true. It's not a worked attendance figure because, you know, All Japan was actually selling out Budokan a hall on a regular basis starting from about this time period, and this crowd, like, just from the audio alone, like, it is like unbelievable how loud this crowd is.
It definitely sounded like there were over 16,000 people in there.
And yeah, you know what, in our original audio I went over the card results. I'm not going to do that just to save time. But if you want, you can go to Cage Match, the site that Eric referenced, a great site, a great resource for any wrestling fan. And you can look up October 21st, 1992, All Japan Pro Wrestling, and you can find the results of this card. But I will say this, we were especially impressed with the semi-main event of Andre the Giant, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Terry Gordy taking on the team of Dory Funk Jr., Giant Baba, and Stan Hansen, a match that lasted just under 15 minutes. And I can't even imagine what 5 minutes of that looked like.
I'm sure it was an absolute classic in 1992.
Yes. I mean, you had the point that if it was if Andre the Giant like was around in 2022 pro wrestling, no, he would probably be pushed to the moon.
Oh man, I feel the tears are being shed again for the loss of some of this. Gold, absolute gold.
Gold. All right, let's get to it though, Eric. Mitsuhara Misawa takes on Toshiaki Kawada for Misawa's Triple Crown title. And right off the bat, Kawada shows he's not fucking around. He's super serious. He wants to beat Misawa for this title. And he immediately just hits Misawa with the backdrop driver suplex, drops Misawa on his noggin, and pops this crowd into a frenzy 2 minutes into this match.
It was a brutal drop too. Like he did not gently lie the man on his back. No, it was like nearly head first, and the crowd explodes. Just sets the tone for the match. This isn't just going to be a friendly sparring match between tag partners.
No, Kawada tries to follow up this move with a kick, but Misawa blocks it, and he goes for his signature elbow, but Kawada wisely steps back to avoid it. They lock up again, and Kawada grabs Misawa's left arm, which I should note is not his dominant arm. It's not the one he throws elbows with. It's not the one with the elbow pad on it. And he goes for an armbar takedown. Kawada maintains control of the arm with several armbar takedowns, and he works over the arm by dropping knees on it and locking in a hammerlock. And I made a point earlier that I don't know, like for me, I think I would have, you know, the better story would be to go after the right arm, the dominant arm, the elbow strike arm. But you made a point, kind of like seeing kind of a logic in him working the left arm here.
I did. I thought if you're looking at it from a first match perspective, knowing that Misawa was winning, I think it actually makes sense to have Kawada work the left arm in the first match. And as these guys, their rivalry progresses, he can acknowledge, like from a kayfabe perspective, obviously, that his strategy in their first match was poor, and he can attack the right arm in the future. So I actually really like the idea of him going after the left arm in this initial matchup.
Misawa gets out of the hammerlock, but Kawada quickly regains control of Misawa with a drop toe hold. And then from this drop toe hold, he decides to kick Misawa in the back really stiffly. And this pisses off Misawa. From here, these two lock up again, and Kawada takes control with different types of arm submissions. But Misawa forces a rope break, and this which makes Kawada go for another submission attempt. Misawa again forces the rope break. And this time, Kawada decides, I'm going to knee Misawa in the nose. Okay. And from this, it's like no more fucking around from Misawa now. And he unloads a flurry of elbows to Kawada's face. And some of them look pretty fucking stiff.
Yeah, these looked like they fucking hurt. I mean, he was laying these in, and I thought in doing so, he really did a great job of expressing his frustration at that point in the match after the initial 5 or so minutes.
Yeah, and even from that, you know, that first backdrop suplex, he doesn't look angry. He looks more like surprised, you know, at Kawada.
Agreed.
That he did that. It's not until this point of the match, I'd say, what are we, like 5, 7 minutes in, like that he's like, now he's mad. Like the stoicism of Misawa has been broken, and he is now just like, okay, fuck you, Kawada. You want to do it? Let's do it. So he's throwing these elbows at Kawada's face. He also throws in a healthy, you know, helping of stomps, kicks, and forearms to Kawada. He snapmares Kawada and then starts working over his back, which is, you know, like if you think about Misawa's, like, you know, finishers, one of them is the Tiger Driver, which, you know, like, you know, works on the back by dropping your opponent on their back and knocking the wind out of them to hopefully get a 1-2-3. You know, from here, you know, there are several attempts at escape from Kawada until he finally succeeds by doing a jumping double back kick to Misawa. And you know, originally we talked about like for a man Kawada's size, he's like I don't know, like listed about like 250 260, you know, but I maybe realistically more like 240 250, But even at 240, this man is a big dude, and he's able to do like some pretty impressive like jumping back, like jumping types of kicks in his matches.
Like, honestly, both of these men, when you look at their physiques, their size, they will blow you away in terms of their athleticism that they display really in all of their matches.
And also, we have to talk about the cardio these guys have. It's pretty amazing. Like,
oh, absolutely ridiculous, the things that they do. And these are long matches. These are almost always long matches. And the pace that they keep throughout the vast majority of them is remarkable.
The Kawada Misawa then go for a Greco-Roman knuckle lock, and Kawada quickly gets the advantage and takes Misawa's back and tries going for a sleeper hold or a rear naked choke. And as our resident MMA expert here at Post Wrestling, Eric, like, how do you rate Kawada's technique at the rear naked choke here?
So what I said in our initial thing, and I'll kind of repeat here, is it's really hard to make a lot of these. So as you brought up, in the 90s, you can see a lot more MMA or jiu-jitsu styled submission grappling game worked into professional wrestling now that a more mainstream audience were aware of how this stuff really looks. And honestly, it's tough to make a lot of it look good. The thing that I specify, triangle chokes in professional wrestling, 95% of them are fucking awful. But it is important to acknowledge when these guys are actually doing good work. And I thought the grappling was pretty good throughout this match.
Are you trying to insinuate that the Undertaker's Gogo Plata does not look good?
It's not the worst one, I'll give him that, but it could use some work.
back to this match. Misawa rolls to the ropes, and both men then start trading kicks with one another, with Misawa surprising everyone by landing a couple of really stiff kicks to Kawada's back. So kind of taking a page out of Kawada's playbook here. He follows up with elbows to Kawada's back and then does a monkey flip. All this is just working over Kawada's back, and it's a really smart strategy that he pretty much sticks to throughout the middle portion of this match, Eric.
Yeah, he does. And let me tell you, some of these strikes are absolutely brutal. Like, they made me cringe, especially the ones that really got me were the standing elbows to the spine. These looked fucking painful.
The story is he like, you know, he calloused his elbow to the point where it's like made of stone.
I can buy that.
That was the story that they would put through commentary usually.
I buy it.
I don't know how true that is. You know, Kobashi, one of his legit training techniques would be to like do lariats and chops to like a street lamp.
Oh my, there are MMA fighters who've done similar things, and I always think it's insane, but maybe part of it's psychological, I don't know.
Misawa follows up with the back work with using a Boston crab and some kicks, all to further damage Kawada's lower back here. And like I said before, this is all set up for a tiger driver that he wants to probably use a little bit later on in the match. Misawa also hits a rib breaker and gets a quick one count on Kawada just to maybe fuck with his mind. He then from there applies a camel clutch on Kawada. He follows up with more elbow strikes on Kawada's back and kind of moves into this kind of a weird looking like modified single leg crab where I don't think he really gets a really good hold of his leg. So it looks kind of weak in my opinion.
Positioning was a bit off on that one. I agree.
Kawada gets to the ropes. Misawa hits a vertical suplex and goes back to sticking a knee into Kawada's back. And I kind of made this note here, Eric, that this is all really smart on Misawa's part, if a little uninspiring for me. Like I was kind of like, okay, it's not bad. I just don't find it like that exciting because I just feel it's like, okay, he's just doing kind of the same thing, but just a little bit differently each time. But it's not, to me, super exciting, this kind of control segment from Misawa.
I understand that. I feel like I personally don't mind a slow pace as long as it eventually picks up and there's a story being told. And that's kind of where I felt personally on this one as well. But I've heard that a lot, like especially if we want to relate it to a modern day performer, I feel like that's a criticism that Kazuchika Okada gets a lot. And maybe it's fair.
Yeah, I mean, like, they will have, like, I'm thinking about this match in a context of the other matches they would have against one another. And
which are, the pace is different in future matchups than it is in this one, yeah. Especially for this this middle portion, because it does pick up.
It does, yeah. But back to the match, Kawada gets back to the ropes and Misawa goes to Irish whip him. But, you know, Kawada reverses it on him and Kawada hits this beautiful spinning kick to Misawa's face, which gets him a two count on Misawa. But I, again, going back to like how agile Kawada is, like this thing is just back kick, the spinning back kick, the precision, the height of which he gets his leg up to hit Misawa in the face, just absolutely beautiful. And again, for a man his size, he's very, very limber. He's very, very agile.
And this kick absolutely wakes up the crowd. Like, not that they were ever dead, but for the more portion of the match where they're mostly working on Kawada's back, obviously it was a bit slower, a bit more meticulous grappling, right? So the crowd's naturally a bit quieter. When it gets to this point, they wake up and they stay pretty crazy for the rest of this one.
Kawada goes for the Sasori Katame, aka the Scorpion Deathlock, which he then turns into a bow and arrow. Misawa is able to escape out of this by rolling over into a quick pin for a two count on Kawada. Misawa rolls out of the ring to get a breather. And, you know, and again, this goes back to like, this is their first match. They're still tag team partners. They're still friends. While Misawa goes out of the ring, normally in later matches, Kawada would probably just try to follow him out there to like hit him with like a power bomb on the apron or something like that, or something that's going to like really hurt him a lot. And like, we really weaken him for later on in the match, but he just waits in the ring for him to he lets Misawa have this breather. Probably, you know, in a kayfabe sense, it's probably like the biggest mistake he makes in this match.
Aside from working the left arm instead of the right arm, right, WH?
Well, hey, listen, I'm telling you, like, if I see that elbow pad and I know what it's for, is since I'm his tag team partner, yeah, I'm going for his biggest weapon. That's just me, you know? What can I say?
A lot of mistakes here, and that's why he has a terrible record against Misawa.
You know, I love Kawada more than I love Misawa. But, you know, I cannot deny the truth of your words, Eric Marcotte. I really can't in this situation right now. Kawada emulates Misawa when the latter gets back in the ring. Kawada attacks with forearms and elbows. He does a scoop slam senton combo, which is one of Misawa's signature moves that he uses a lot in his matches. He then mounts Misawa's back and locks in a Misawa-like face lock, and grinding his forearm into Misawa's nose and cheek. And I feel like, you know, some people who have used the Misawa face lock in later years, like most notably, you know, Zeus, formerly of All Japan Pro Wrestling, like he would use that as his finisher. And if you have like a big enough muscular forearm, like having that stuck and grinding into your nose and cheek, I can see it being a totally legit finisher.
Agreed. Yeah. Although I will admit, when I was watching it in this particular match, I was surprised by just how loud. I mean, half my notes are about the crowd here, but this was one of the loudest reactions of the entire match when this was locked in. I was like, this is incredible. Like, if this happened in front of 90% of crowds, this would just be viewed as a transitional hold, right? But given the context of it, it definitely worked. You can't say it didn't work. Just look at the reaction.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And this is also like, you know, with, you know, lower card talent, you know, Misawa is probably getting submissions on house shows and, or, you know, like shows in on the undercard with like, you know, people underneath him, like in tag matches and things like that at Cork and Hall and things like that. So people are familiar that this can win a match if he wants it to, like, or depending on who the opponent is, really. But it gets reaction. Kawada abandons his emulation of Misawa's tactics, and he goes back to his own tactics of kicks. But, you know, Misawa is starting his comeback from this point, and I kind of get the impression that he's pretty tired of all this shit from Kawada, and it just starts waylaying into him with his signature elbows. So again, he's going back to what he knows best, the elbows. And again, these look so painful to take
yes,
on the other
end. They looked brutal. They looked absolutely brutal.
There's an Irish whip followed by a nice trick, a nice drop kick by Misawa. Misawa goes for another Irish whip, but Kawada counters it into another beautiful looking spin kick. It's these spin kicks. It's these kind of like these really agile looking maneuvers using, you know, Kawada uses with his legs to like really kind of, you know, turn the tide for him throughout the match.
And yeah, that's a continuous theme. You'll have like a period of Misawa control, and then Kawada just hits him with one of these crazy spinning head kicks. And just like that, the tide's been turned.
Kawada goes for a suplex. Misawa blocks it, so Kawada turns it into a Fujiwara armbar. But Misawa gets his foot to the ropes. And how was Kawada's Fujiwara armbar here? How did it look to you?
I thought it looked pretty good, actually. And, you know, the armbar is an easier one to make look good than, say the dreaded triangle choke, but it was a good armbar. Yeah, although whenever the arm's fully extended, it's always a pet peeve of mine. Whenever the arm's fully extended, I'm like, you should be tapping right now, but it's just pro wrestling. It's fine.
Like having me put in like a friendly armbar and had my arm straightened out. I it's a pet peeve of mine. It's like, I always feel like if you're a pro wrestler and you're in and you're going to get, especially like a cross chest arm breaker.
Yes.
I think you should never, if it's not the finish, don't even just never have your arm straightened. When that arm is straightened and they're not tapping.
Yes.
I've been in one. I'm tapping
painful.
Like right away. Like there's no way I'm like not, you know, like I don't even like, and you see a real, like, you know, MMA fighters, they tap right away too. You know,
you are preaching to the choir right now. It's one of my things. You know, if I'm going to give all these criticisms, I will give a shout out, because if there's one performer who understands this, it's a current performer, that is, it's Shingo Takagi. The man understands that you tap out immediately when an arm bar is fully locked in. I have to give him a shout out.
One of the biggest offenders of this is like not necessarily being in one, but using this as a potential, you know, finisher is Yuji Nagata. Like, I don't know how many times I've seen him use a straight armbar, like, or a cross chest arm breaker, and they don't tap, even though it's like he's extended their arm. It's just like, dude, don't even agree to like you straightening their arm out. Like, just tell him, like, just struggle. You know, anyway,
his technique must be off. That must be it.
Well, I mean, his technique is all about, you know, being full of blue justice, but maybe not for actually submitting anyone. But hey, you know what? I've seen him win matches using an armbar and stuff like that. So it's just like, then he should always win a match with an armbar. That's what I feel like. Where am I on my notes? Okay, there's a strike exchange between Misawa and Kawada, which Misawa wins with using his elbows, of course. But Kawada is not done, and he jumps right back up and fires back with elbows of his own, to which Misawa answers with a spin kick, basically telling Kawada he can play, let's steal each other's moves as well as Kawada. And Misawa goes on a streak of moves and strikes, running elbow, then a diving elbow, then a tiger driver attempt, but Kawada counters that by charging into him into the corner. There's another strike exchange that ensues, and this Budokan crowd is well up for it. They are like, you can hear them like stomping their feet, they're cheering each man's names, they're clapping, and there's just a sense of electricity running throughout this building.
And that's something you create by producing first time matchups between stars, something that's hard to do, increasingly hard to do in the modern era.
Well, I mean, everyone works for one company or two companies in America, so it's kind of hard.
In Japan, it's if you look at rosters like the Noah, New Japan, All Japan, it feels like everyone's wrestled each other a trillion times.
Yeah, I mean,
and there's not to say there isn't still some matchups that they haven't touched, but just when you have smaller rosters running shows so frequently, it's natural, right?
It is. I think that's why you see a plethora of, like, you know, like tag matches on you know, house show cards, you know. But it's, you know, like, that's, yeah, I mean, you're totally right. The point you're making is like, you create this kind of atmosphere, you create, you know, you generate box office by giving fans like matches that they want to see, but maybe haven't got to see. And, you know, if it's the first time doing it, then you're probably gonna have a very, very good gate. for that show. So,
exactly. They're going to see something that they've perhaps always wanted to see, but it's never happened before.
Kawada goes for a kick to the face, but Misawa dodges it. Misawa fires back with his own jumping kicks. Kawada retaliates with a running lariat to the back of the head. This was brutal. Like,
yes, it was. There was a lot of that going around.
Yeah, one thing I want to say about Kawada, and this is something I made a point my the last show, is that Kawada, like, he's always said, oh, he's the kick guy. He's not the kick guy. He's not, because like his offense compared to everyone else on this roster is very, very, like, varied. Like, he has a lot of different things that he likes to do with his strikes. Like, he does the elbows, he does the forearms, he does lariats and things like that. But like, you know, what other people don't do as well as him are like these running, like charging kicks, with, you know, what like Masahiro Chono would call his Yakuza kick. But we don't use that term for Kawada because like he's not Masahiro Chono. Like, I don't like when people refer to anyone else but Masahiro Chono doing a Yakuza kick, because no, that's his, what he calls it. And that's what like you should refer to it as. Like, this is the running high kick. That's what I just call it for Kawada. Kawada's running high kick is very unique to him, but it's not like he doesn't use other people's, not other people's, but like he'll chop, he'll lariat people, he'll use his elbows to hit people in the face as well. That's one of the things like I really like latch onto with Kawada, is that he doesn't like kind of, what's the phrase I want to say? He doesn't like limit himself or just put himself in like a certain sandbox, so to speak.
No, he's very versatile, and that's on display in a match like this.
From here, from this running lariat to the back of the head, Kawada goes for a pin, but Misawa kicks out at two. Kawada then power bombs Misawa, but Misawa reaches the ropes. Did he get the powerbomb from here? Do you remember?
I may be a bit lost in my notes, but I have he gets it and there's a big near fall. But
okay, so he gets it. Misawa reaches the ropes to break the count. There are more kicks from Kawada, and then he goes for another powerbomb, but Misawa blocks it, so Kawada kicks him in the face again.
There's a lot of that.
Kawada finally hits another powerbomb, but this time he goes for his folding powerbomb, which is like one of his finishers, but Misawa just barely kicks out of it, and Budokan is just going crazy at this point. But like my criticism here, Eric, is that like, you know what, if like he shouldn't have hit the folding powerbomb, he shouldn't have been successful, because I think that's a move that should be protected, because he does actually, you know, the first time he ever pins Misawa in his entire career, it's using the folding powerbomb. And I just feel like you gotta keep that move, like, you know, special, and like you protect it.
If they were going to do it, maybe they could have done it a bit later into the match too. Maybe that would have helped as a proper near fall. I mean, going into this, I knew the match length, so that's obviously going to affect me buying it, but I see what you're saying.
Kawada presses his advantage at this point with a variety of offense, including a body slam, a diving knee drop, and like these are all by the diving knee drop, by the way, is to Misawa's head. But yeah, Misawa is able to survive this. He kicks out at two in the pin attempt. Kawada goes for his signature stretch plum submission hold that he was inspired to take from Plum Mariko, a very famous Joshi who invented this move. But Misawa is able to escape the stretch plum by reaching the ropes. Kawada goes for the stretch plum again, but Misawa throws him off. But Kawada's third time is a charm, and Kawada gets the stretch plum back on Misawa and just starts cranking on it. I love it when he, like, you know, there's a point where, you know, in a Kawada match, he gets that stretch plum on again, like not the first time he'll do it, but maybe the second or third time, and he'll just like start twisting, you know, his opponent's body, like turning him to like a kind of a human corkscrew.
They milk this one to the fullest potential, having him just miss out on it a couple of times and then locking it in to this extent where he's practically twisting Misawa. They capitalized to the fullest on this submission.
Yeah, Misawa's only chance is to reach the ropes, and he does, and actually both guys get out of the ring in exhaustion at this point in the match, and the crowd is going nuts for all of this. Kawada is the first to recover, and he throws Misawa back into the ring and hits him with another lariat for the 1-2 kick out. Kawada hits a running high kick to Misawa's face, but goes to the well once too many times as he catches him. Like, Misawa catches him from when he tries it again and hits an elbow, but Kawada responds to this elbow with another running high kick. So they're just trading like their signature strikes at this point here, Eric.
They do, and it works completely. Every time he gets one of those running high kicks, or specifically the spinning wheel kick, it completely gets the audience, and it creates a momentum change in the match. When you're doing it in a more of an exchange like this, it's a bit of a different scenario, but still, I thought it was a really great part of the match.
Misawa avoids losing the match by getting his foot on the ropes. Kawada's attempts a German suplex, which is countered by Misawa going for one of his own. Kawada escapes this German suplex attempt that's being tried on him, and he tries for another lariat, but Misawa ducks and is able to hit a bridging German suplex, but it's not enough to keep Kawada down for the 3. Misawa then goes for his tiger driver. 1-2. Kawada barely kicks out in time. And again, like, this is something we're just going to keep on saying, Eric, until the end of this match. This crowd is like biting on all these big bombs that Misawa and Kawada are delivering to one another. They're buying into like the fact that this could be the end of the match. This could be either like Misawa retaining his title or Kawada winning the title from Misawa. But no, like, and it just builds. It doesn't even like hit a dipping point or anything. Like, this crowd, their investment in this match is just gets deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah, we sound like a bit of a broken record, but it's the truth. The crowd sends this match to another level. They're so invested in every single near fall. They bite on everything. They could have done a finger poke of doom and the crowd would have bit on a 3 count. It was ridiculous.
It would have killed the territory like it did WCW, though. Yeah. You know? Can I just say, just as an aside, like, I understand, like, I follow Kevin Nash on the Twitter, and I usually agree with pretty much everything he says, but I have to say, like, people who, like, I think are ironically like, oh, what a great man. Like, I'm like, he destroyed WCW. He helped destroy it, you know, with his book. So not that great.
I think there were so many factors going into this destruction of WCW that they just, you know, they give Big Kev a pass,
but yeah. I don't. Because I'm not co-opted by Kevin Nash. I like Kevin Nash. Don't get me wrong. Like, I like his views on the world, very similar to my own. But hey, like, him, Russo, Bischoff, Hogan, they all contributed, and Kevin Nash contributed to that as well. Anyways, back to this match. Misawa goes for his signature face lock, and Kawada is able to get himself to the ropes to escape this. Misawa, though, does maintain his control and locks in another face lock, which leads to a pin attempt, but Kawada still has some fight left in him. But Misawa won't give up his strategy, Eric, and goes for another face lock. But this time, Kawada reaches the rope yet again. And again, like, you know, like every time Misawa goes for this face lock, the crowd thinks, okay, this is it. He's going to get it this time. He's going to get Kawada to submit, but Kawada won't give in to the face lock. And it's just great stuff. It's just like, I love when people just go for the same submission hold again and again, like, you know, with the idea that, oh, okay, this time I'm going to lock it on and I've worn him down enough where it's going to work this time.
Yeah, the accumulation of damage. They go back to these same spots, whether we're talking about their signature submissions or even the spinning head kicks and forearms. They continuously go back to these spots to increasingly bigger reactions from the crowd. It's just a testament to the storytelling of their expression throughout the match, really.
But Kawada is kind of just laying on the mat here, and he's in a prone position, which makes him a perfect target for the Mitsuhara Misawa frog splash, which he hits successfully. But Kawada kicks out and rolls out of the ring, which turns out to be a bad idea for him, Eric, because Misawa does not let up on the attack and hits the ropes on the other side and then flies through the top and middle rope and hits Kawada with this awesome, awesome looking elbow suicida. Incredible.
Listen, he catches Kawada here, but Misawa smashes his right arm and right shoulder right into that guardrail. And I'm just thinking at this point in the match and this guy's size, it looked brutal. Like I can't even imagine the pain that you would feel in your shoulder after doing that.
Budokan Hall is chanting both for Misawa and Kawada at this point. Misawa, Kawada. It's not like a cheesy dueling, you know, chant like you see in like modern wrestling, like, you know, or thank God we don't hear anything stupid like both these guys. I hate that fucking chant with a passion.
We can jump right into like a mid-match 90s All Japan "You Deserve It" chant. Yeah.
Let me tell you something, Eric. We ever go to the same like indie show? I don't know if you would find this annoying or amusing, but I will just eviscerate the fans around me.
Well, I've heard stories.
Like, I wouldn't necessarily say anything to people around me, but I will maybe like say to you, this guy's a fucking idiot. Or those people over there, they're chanting something stupid. And it's like Darwin's waiting room over there. Evolution stopped. You know, that's how I feel. So something to look forward to, Eric, to go to a wrestling show with me in person. Yeah,
one day when someone comes to Toronto, maybe.
Yes. No, I mean, even like, you know, better an indie show. Indie shows are wonderful for me, for just taking shots at the other people in the building.
Picking apart these poor audience members who are trying to help these indie promotions thrive. You're sick.
I help. I pay. I would pay, you know, the admission, you know. Anyways, Budokan Hall is chanting both for Misawa and Kawada at this point. Misawa presses his advantage and lands a running elbow smash for another two count. Misawa again tries. For the running elbow, but Kawada is able to jump up, and he hits the Gamangiri to Misawa's face. Another amazing jumping high kick from Kawada, showing off his amazing agility, especially at this point in the match. Like, he must be fucking exhausted.
Definitely. We're deep into the match at this point, and these guys are still doing some ridiculously athletic things. I mean, we said this earlier, but when you look at these guys, the athletic feats that they're capable of this deep into a match like this, it really is remarkable.
Kawada hits Misawa with some kicks and then goes for a series of more kicks, but this time to the leg, and then he attempts a dragon suplex. Misawa blocks it, but Kawada nails him with another layer to the back of the head. Poor back of Misawa's head here. Then he hits a bridging German suplex that Kawada does, by the way. Misawa kicks out of that, and then a dragon suplex from Kawada is successful this time. So this is his second attempt at trying the dragon suplex. He hits it this time, but Misawa won't stay down, I mean, and he kicks out from the pin attempt.
That may have been the biggest reaction of the entire match. It was up there at the very least.
The kicking out of the dragon suplex?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that dragon suplex did look like it pretty much knocked Misawa out.
Yeah.
Kawada applies a face lock and then transitions into a sleeper with a body scissors, but Misawa is able to roll over to the ropes to break the hold. Kawada kicks Misawa's face, and that only serves to anger him. And then Misawa retaliates with more elbows. Misawa goes for a spin kick, but Kawada grabs his foot. But Misawa then kicks him in the face with his free leg. So Kawada, to reiterate, Misawa goes for a spin kick. Kawada catches his leg, his foot, but Misawa jumps up and then kicks Kawada in the face with the leg that is not being held by Kawada in this sequence, which is great. I thought it's just what a sequence, just flows so nicely.
This was a great spot after that spinning head kick, mostly from Kawada, but from both men, had been such a big part of the match, done so many times to this point, that you play off that by having Misawa actually jump and kick him in the head with his other leg after Kawada catches it. This was really a smart spot.
There's a rough looking running elbow from Misawa to the back of Kawada's head, which like legit looks like it made Kawada loopy, Eric.
I wouldn't have been surprised. Like, these guys were laying it in with the elbows. And whenever you hit a guy in the back of the head, that's always, that's actually never good. I'm
saying, no, that's not good. No. There's a pin attempt from Misawa. One, two. Kawada kicks out. There's a tiger driver. One, two. Nope. Bridging tiger suplex. One, two. No. Kawada will not stay down, Eric. And the crowd's going nuts. Misawa goes to pick Kawada up. But Dangerous K fires back with kicks to Misawa's head. Kawada just won't give up. You know, like that's the thing. Like that's what gets, like he's already over with this crowd, but this like just takes it to a different level where they're now like invested in him. If he wins, like even if it's like Misawa's only defense of this title reign, if that's like where this, like we have our sliding doors moment, like Baba says, you know what, let's give Kawada the win just to make it equal. Put them on a level playing field. If I don't think fans would have like been against it. You know, they wanted to see Misawa win the title for so long, but if Kawada won from him in his first defense, like I think they would have been fine because the performance that Kawada gives in this match is just amazing.
From the entrances, I mean, not that the crowd was anti-Misawa, far from it, but they were behind Kawada in this match. They wanted, the live crowd at very least, they wanted to see him win.
Kawada struggles to get up, so he kicks at Misawa from his seated position. Misawa breaks through Kawada's attempts to stay alive in this match and hits another running elbow, and then follows up with the tiger, not the tiger driver, but with the tiger suplex, and he goes for the one, two, and three, and he wins the match. Eric, he finally beats Kawada with the running elbow and the tiger suplex combination in 29 minutes and 52 seconds. So basically a 30-minute match. But we should note that in this tiger suplex, it like Kawada was actually very close to the ropes. In fact, his foot had touched one of the ropes, but the referee did not see this, so he counted the 1, 2, 3. So, you know, like I think it's really smart because like Kawada can say, hey, I actually, you know, like if you watch the footage, I don't actually get, you know, pinned cleanly because my foot was on the rope. But I don't know, it might be one of those instances where like, you know, it's not just enough to touch the rope, you have to maintain contact with the rope to break the hold.
It's a really good conclusion in terms of creating something for them to work with in the future. And let me say, I am typically not a fan of the match ending and the guy's foot is on the ropes and the ref just didn't see it. They did it to perfection here because he just kind of touches it. Like the referee wouldn't see it in this scenario. If it was intentional, which I'm assuming it was done to perfection here.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, you know, a lot of Japanese referees are taught to like treat it like a shoot, so if they don't kick out, because like if he doesn't see it, if that wasn't the plan, which, you know, maybe in the heat of the moment, yeah, the referee Kyohei Wada, the legendary All Japan ref of this era, could have just like forgot, who knows. I don't think Misawa was gonna lose the title in his first defense here, you know, and I imagine, you know, Kawada's foot being on it, the rope maybe was brought up, but I mean, they don't have another match for like another year, right? Like I went through how many times Kawada fought for this title in this particular, like the next time he faces him is like for the Triple Crown is like in 93. So about a year later. So maybe it doesn't really play into the match at all, Eric.
Perhaps there is no immediate rematch, but, regardless if it was their intention for Kawada's foot to be under the rope here, it was done perfectly. And if it wasn't their intention, guess what? If you want to do that finish, look at the end of this match and you will see how it should be done.
That's right. Exactly. Anyways, so we've reached the end of the match. Give us your quick thoughts overall on what you thought of Masao versus Kawada from this time.
All right. I'll start by just talking briefly about the finish here. I thought the finishing sequence was a fantastic storytelling because you had Kawada, who manages, he's getting his ass kicked throughout the majority of the last 5 minutes. Like, it's near fall for Misawa after near fall for Misawa, and Kawada's just staying alive, right? And near the very end of the match, he's on his back, and he actually creates a moment for himself by kicking, like, off of his back, kicking Misawa over and over and over again. And Misawa's kind of hurt, but he's so hurt himself, he can't get back to his feet. And that allows Misawa to hit that big forearm before the ending. And I thought that was just a tremendous finish.
The part where he crumbles, right?
Yeah. It was like, I don't know if I've seen that finish done before quite like that. And it's one of the parts that stuck out for me the most because I thought it was just great storytelling at the end.
I love it when it's like, you don't know if it's like it's part of the match or if it's like a shoot, right? Like maybe he's legit cannot get up because he's so exhausted and he's so like taking so much legit damage throughout this match from Misawa that he's like, I can't stand up actually now.
You know what? That wouldn't shock me either.
But the thing with Kawada is that he is so famous for like this, for being such an amazing like seller, like especially with what they call delayed selling, where like he'll get hit with a move, he'll be fine for 1 or 2 seconds, maybe he get to hit his own move, but then he's like it catches up to him and he just starts like selling it. Then I just think he's a master of that, and so like I can totally see it being like it was on purpose. And he's fine, relatively speaking. And it's just another reason why I love Kawada so much as a wrestler. Any other thoughts?
The other big note I had here throughout the match is I thought that Misawa's storytelling with his expressions, with his body language, really from the opening bell until the end, was really encapsulating throughout the match. I mean, you can sense his frustrations building at Kawada's aggression early on, and how that frustration eventually couples with exhaustion towards the end of the match as Kawada keeps kicking out, and he's really selling it with his expression, with his body language when he's trying to get more aggressive, when he's just trying to put him away. I thought he did an amazing job here.
Great points. And for me, I if I was giving this a 5-star match rating using that scale of 5 stars, I would give this like a 4.25. Not a great match. I do think this is a great match. I don't think it's like on like as great as what it's going to become, this rivalry, but this is really great. I will say, like, again, like to reiterate, the middle portion I do feel drags a little, like where Kawada is working over the non-dominant arm and MSL is working on Kawada's back. But it does play into like later on in the match, my God, that the last 5 to 7 minutes is just incredible pacing and crowd investment in this match is off the charts, and I think like in context, this match really can be appreciated as the prelude to what the next 8 years or so between Masao and Kawada will end up looking like in the ring.
If I were to give it a star rating, I'd probably go with a 4.5. The only thing that really held it back for me was, like I said, I don't mind a slower pace, but if you're going to spend nearly 15 minutes working the left arm of Misawa, I would want that to impact the story a bit more throughout the final 10 minutes. And it was kind of a non-factor towards the end of the match. So
yeah, which is weird because both these guys are really good for like putting that extra detail in their psychology. So the fact that I didn't necessarily bring this up, so I'm glad you did, is that it doesn't really play into anything. Like it doesn't really factor into not necessarily the finish, but like into the later parts of this match as far as the storytelling goes. So I was again like, why even bother doing that stuff?
You know? If you're going to spend so much time on it and it doesn't factor into the end stretch, then it makes it seem more like you're just kind of filling time for the sake of filling time, right?
That's right. I think so. Well, anyways, any other thoughts before we move on and kind of get to the closing stretch of this particular episode, Eric?
No, I think that's all I had to say. This was a really, really great match, great storytelling, and most of all, one last time, a great crowd.
A great crowd. So cannot wait for crowds to be like this again in the future.
I wonder between our two recordings of this podcast, how many times we said great crowd or this crowd reacted. Or...
You know what? I don't think in the our first attempt at this, I don't think we got to the point where we were like really praising crowd that much. So maybe it was all good. It was all meant to be that we have this take, this attempt to just put the crowd over as much as we put over both Misawa and Kawada in this match. So with that being said, let's wrap it up here. And Eric, where can people find more of your fine work if they enjoy listening to you talk about Misawa versus Kawada with me?
All my written work and podcast appearances can be found at postwrestling.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it'd be EricMarcotte705. And finally, if you just want to talk to me and various other Post personalities, the Post community at large, head to postwrestling.com/discord. We have a pretty large, thriving community there. There, you can talk about wrestling, you can talk about MMA, you can talk about whatever you want, really. So pop in and say hi.
I myself do not do Discord at all. I don't have the time. I feel I spend too much time as it is on social media. So... but I have heard good things about the Post Wrestling Discord. It's not like some weird echo chamber for a cult of personality like some other Discords I've heard about. So it's you know, I think, are you one of the moderators of that Discord?
I am, yeah.
And you try to keep it positive, right?
I mean, positive in the respectable sense. You're allowed to say whatever you want. If you think I'm in there being positive about the PFL, you got another thing coming.
No, not the PFL, but you know, no,
it's the Post community, right? And in general, I'd say the Post community is a very positive place, fostered largely off of the environment that John and Wei have created over the years, right?
Well, I mean, this is why I probably don't go to Discord. I'd toxify it up.
You're always welcome in the MMA channel where you can just hate everything with us.
Oh, really? No, I want to go in the pro wrestling channel.
I would love to see you make an appearance in there. Okay.
Like, you better watch out, you know, so-and-so from so-and-so plays or wherever, you know, like I will come to destroy your cold takes on everything.
Well, there you go. I think that's a sell. That one day, WH will make his way to the Post Wrestling Discord.
I know Phil's gonna kick me out of there. I don't know. Your partner, Phil Chertok.
He hasn't kicked me out yet. You'll be fine.
Well, there you go. What an endorsement right there. All right. Well, yeah, you can follow Eric. All his work. He's exclusive to postwrestling.com. Does most of his stuff talking about MMA, but occasionally, like today, he'll come on talk about some professional wrestling. Myself, you can find me at Twitter on with the username at whpark9. That's the number 9. You can also find most of my work is also at Post Wrestling, the Long and Winding Railroad, this show, which, by the way, you can get a really nice, cool t-shirt that is very popular with a lot of people in wrestling itself. Eddie Kingston, Jonah, you know. They, you know, more people are going to get that shirt. I think it's spreading like a virus all over professional wrestling, Eric.
I am literally wearing that shirt as we speak.
I am literally also wearing this shirt as we speak. It's a shame we're not doing the video gimmick for this particular episode then.
And I'll assume every listener is wearing their shirt as well.
Listen, you can buy it at postwrestling.com. Also, I do every month, I do the Post Perez show, sometimes with John Pollock, sometimes with Karen Peterson, sometimes with somebody else. But yeah, we're going to have another episode of that coming on soon. What else do I do? MCU Later, which you have been a guest on.
I have.
And we're in the midst of doing our Miss Marvel review. So, you know, we got a couple more episodes of that left. That's been a fun show to talk about so far. And what else we got? What else do I do? Oh, if you want to hear me somewhere else, I also do a Star Wars-centric podcast reviewing the Obi-Wan Kenobi series on Disney Plus. We just wrapped that up, me and JP Houlihan over at Grapple. That's on the free feeds. So you don't have to be a member of their Patreon necessarily. But hey, there's a lot of good stuff on their Patreon. I do recommend if you have a couple of dollars to spare, a couple of great British pounds to spare, some sterling. Is that what it's called? I don't know. Their currency.
I also
confuses
don't
me.
Know if you're looking for help here. I don't know either.
The currency over in the United Kingdom kind of confuses me. But hey, give Benno, JP, a heads up. Give him a try is what I would say. But I do the show Hello There over there at talking about Star Wars, talking about Kenobi. But we're gonna continue. We finished Kenobi. We're gonna win the Andor series comes up on Disney Plus. We're going to review that. You know, JP might start watching Star Wars Rebels, and we'll do maybe season recaps of those. You know, who knows? There's a lot of, if you want to hear me talk about Star Wars, that's the place to go. Did you know, Eric, I kind of half jokingly pitched doing a Star Wars podcast with Wei.
This is the Wei, right?
This is the Wei. I've told you this story.
I listen to your podcast, WH. I know all the stories.
Oh, you listen to Hello There?
Of course.
Did you like when I eviscerated episode 5?
I haven't seen the episode 5, so I just agreed with you. You know, so WH knows.
Oh, but you listen to the review of it. You haven't watched the episode?
Even if I don't watch a show, I usually listen to the review of like anything on the feed.
You can just skip episode 5 because it sucks.
There you go.
It is some terrible writing. Anyways, this show's gone on too long. But hey, everyone, Post Perez, Long and Winding Railroad. There are t-shirts for both shows. store.postwrestling.com. Go check them out. They're both excellent designs. MCU Later. You know, we are thinking about a t-shirt for that show. Like, you know, I haven't heard too much. Maybe I'm gonna bring it up with Wei tomorrow when we record MCU Later. But keep your eye out for that on store.postwrestling.com. Hello there over Grapple Spotlight. And yeah, I don't know, Eric, you know, thanks for coming on, by the way.
Yeah, no, of course. We practically did two podcasts today. I say that's good work.
Listen, you know who's going to be the most upset about the lost audio is John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
Because
is.
The
we
amount of
about him for a while,
the amount of praise you and I both heaped on him. He's just going to be sad that he's never going to hear us saying so many nice things about him.
That's true. Sorry, Cena. Maybe next time.
No, that was it. That was a one-time opportunity for Cena. Anyways, for all the listeners, on behalf of Eric, I want to say thank you for supporting the show, for listening, for downloading, for buying the t-shirt, wearing it at on TV, at indie shows, at your supermarket, wherever. And until the next episode, until next time, I just want to say goodbye.